for the infliction of emotional distress, because I don't know if you could see in that video, but Herman was killed in our home right in front of us. Mm. And it was so tragic and unexpected and unnecessary.
You're a judge, Gladys Whitfield. I'm wondering, yes, in this last 30 seconds, when someone is dealing with a mental health crisis, what are they supposed to do?
Well, my understanding, based upon the complaints or the pleadings that have been filed in court and the depositions where the officers were deposed and asked about what proper procedure is in a case where an individual is having mental health crises, the officers are supposed to take time, try to negotiate, talk to the person, you know, use persuasion, and to just try to de-escalate.
Well, Judge Gladys Whitfield, we have to leave it there, but this is an issue we will continue to talk about. Gladys Whitfield is the mother of Herman Whitfield III, award-winning African-American piano virtuoso killed by Indianapolis Police in 2022 after his parents called 911 to ask for help for their son experiencing a mental health crisis. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO, Portland, no compromise in defense of the truth.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's nominating committee meeting will be held on Tuesday, December 17th at 6 p.m. This meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting...
You're listening to KBOO's Catalog of Connections year-end campaign, where we bring you a range of community-oriented programming built by community members like you. Help KBOO reach our $75,000 goal by December 31st, so we can bring you another great year of cutting-edge radio made by you, for you. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Or text KBOO to 44321 to contribute today.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, grocery giant Albertsons calls off their merger with Kroger after a court pushback.
The Oregon Department of Transportation plans to break ground on the I-5 Rose Quarter expansion next summer, despite not having enough money.
And in national news, threatened monarch butterflies get new protections in the western U.S.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, December 11th, 2024. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Josh Salem. The proposed merger between grocery giants Kroger and Albertsons is off. On Tuesday, two separate federal judges in Oregon and Washington blocked their proposed merger. Today, Albertsons sued Kroger, quote, for willful breach of contract and failing to secure the merger. U.S. District Court Judge Adrian Nelson found, quote, the evidence shows that defendants engage in substantial head-to-head competition, and the proposed merger would remove that competition. End quote. Kroger operates 2,700 stores across 35 states in D.C., including 51 Fred Meyers in Oregon and 59 in Washington. Albertsons operates 2,269 stores in 34 states in D.C., including over 200 Safeways in the Pacific Northwest. As part of the proposal, Kroger said they would sell off nearly 600 stores in places where their locations overlap. Henry Liu is director of the Federal Trade Commission's Bureau of Competition. He said, quote, "This is also a victory for thousands of hardworking union employees, protecting their hard-earned paychecks by ensuring Kroger and Albertsons continue to compete for workers through higher wages, better benefits, and improved working conditions," end quote.
The Oregon Department of Transportation, or ODOT, plans to break ground on the Interstate 5 expansion through Portland's Rose Quarter next summer. But they don't have enough funds to finish the project, and the department is facing three different lawsuits tied to the widening freeway. Earlier this fall, federal transportation officials rejected the state's request for $750 million in grant funding for that expansion. The entire project is estimated to be quite expensive. It involves widening the freeway through northeast Portland and capping the highway too, meaning the Albina neighborhood could be reconnected. That total price tag is near $2 billion. So why break ground this summer? The Oregon Transportation Commission voted to give ODOT $250 million to start the project last week. With that amount, plus some already collected, they won't be able to finish the project and will need more money from state lawmakers to complete it. The current amount of money would pay for a widening southbound I-5 between the 405 and the Morrison Bridge exit, and to start widening the northbound lanes between I-84 and Widler Street. Currently, the funds they have would only pay for one block of capping the freeway between Northeast Widler and Broadway. The advocacy group No More Freeways is suing ODOT, saying the Rose Quarter project is out of step with the city and state's climate goals. State lawmakers would need to give ODOT a lot more cash to get the project done, and ODOT has another freeway priority in Portland, too. The agency wants to spend on the I-205 Abernethy Bridge, making seismic improvements. But in prioritizing these, some other projects around the state have been postponed. Oregonians outside of Portland are pressing ODOT and lawmakers to prioritize their transportation needs, too.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will extend federal protections to monarch butterflies, adding them to the threatened species list by the end of next year. This follows an extensive public commentary period. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Director Martha Williams said, quote, "The iconic monarch butterfly is cherished across North America, captivating children and adults throughout its fascinating life cycle," end quote. The proposed listing would generally prohibit anyone from killing or transporting the butterfly. People and farmers could continue to remove milkweed, a key food source for monarch caterpillars, from their gardens, backyards, and fields. But they would be prohibited from making changes to the land that make it permanently unusable for the species. Their proposal would also designate over 4,000 acres in seven coastal California counties as critical habitat for the butterfly. That's where monarchs west of the Rocky Mountains migrate for winter. The Xerces Society for Invertebrate Conservation counts monarchs each November in California and Arizona. The number of monarchs in those areas has declined 81% in the last 25 years. Monarchs in the eastern U.S. winter in Mexico, where U.S. protections do not apply.
The number and intensity of wildfires have exploded across Oregon in the past 20 years, and state fire officials say climate change is the culprit. Oregon lawmakers will convene for a special session next Thursday on funding firefighters from 2024's record-breaking wildfire season. Mark Richardson reports.
The effects of climate change are making the fire season in Oregon and other western states burn hotter and longer, urgently requiring additional funding and firefighters. Oregon fire officials say the state lost 1.9 million acres during the 2024 fire season, an area larger than Delaware. Patrick Scripp, who manages the Rural Douglas Forest Protective Association, says the fires they fight today are very different from the ones they saw 20 years ago.
Our fire seasons are longer. The weather patterns have changed to where what used to be one in a 10-year event, we'd hit 100 degrees. We hit 100 degrees in our district multiple times in a year.
Local fire officials are talking with state and federal agencies to find a new funding model for their agencies. Scripps says fighting Oregon wildfires in 2024 lost over $300 million. Task Force is scheduled to deliver a new funding plan to the state legislature in February. Scripps says rural associations like his are worried about how they will fight future fires. He says when he started, a 2,000 or 3,000-acre blaze in his region was considered a major fire, but at least one incident this past season covered 180,000 acres.
We're seeing a fire regime starting to march north with the weather creates the change in the climate. And so we used to not get very many significant fires north of Roseburg or in the foothills of the Cascades, but those are becoming much more frequent and common.
Fire season runs from June through October, and in 2024, the Oregon Department of Forestry recorded 1,003 incidents, stressing both the state's manpower and resources. Scripps says the problems are expected to grow.
We've got about 13% of our land base in fire scar, which leaves us with light, flashy fuels. And so the environment that we're asking our young firefighters to engage on is changing, and there's an increased risk.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Mark Richardson.
Avian flu, or H5N1, is spreading rapidly among animals, and that's raising alarms among public health officials. The virus has been detected in Oregon, California, and Idaho. The Oregon Department of Agriculture announced today that commercial dairy farms will start weekly testing for bird flu. As of early December, Oregon has not had an avian flu case in cattle. A poultry expert from the University of California, Davis, highlights the unprecedented scope of avian flu and its potential to mutate into a major human health threat. Shantia Hudson has more from Sacramento.
The rapid spread of avian flu, or H5N1, is raising alarms among scientists, with one UC Davis expert highlighting its unprecedented scale and the risk it poses to humans and animals alike. Maurice Pitsky is an associate professor specializing in poultry disease modeling. He says California's sprawling dairy and poultry farms, often interwoven with natural bird habitats, create a perfect storm for viral transmission.
We've never had an outbreak of an animal-borne virus this large in the last 5 to 10,000 years of human history since we first domesticated animals for food.
The virus has affected more than 100 million birds in the U.S. since 2022, with wastewater samples confirming its presence in California and other states. While most human cases have been mild and linked to direct contact with infected animals, experts are increasingly concerned about the virus's ability to mutate and spread more easily. Pitsky explains that the risk grows as the virus continues to interact with humans and other species. He says the more opportunities the virus has to adapt, the greater the chance it could become more transmissible to humans, potentially sparking a public health crisis.
There's an RNA virus that can mutate really easily, and the more that we keep on tempting fate by having the virus interact with humans, the greater potential for the virus to eventually get snake eyes, if you will, as far as how it can adapt to different hosts, including us.
Health officials urge caution, especially for those working with poultry or livestock. They recommend practicing good hygiene, avoiding raw milk, and staying away from farms where outbreaks have occurred. Meanwhile, experts continue to study the virus's evolution and advocate for measures to reduce human-animal interactions, such as restoring natural bird habitats to limit exposure. For California News Service, I'm Shantia Hudson. This story was produced with original reporting from Donna Tried for Sentient.
Congressional leaders debate presidential accountability, the death penalty, gender equality, Medicare, and Social Security cuts. And Ohio's education policies highlight critical issues shaping the nation's future. With more on these stories, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times. This is about sending a message that no one better hold him to account in his second term. No one better look at what he does, do their congressional job.
California Democratic Senator Adam Schiff says President-elect Donald Trump's threat to jail him and other members of the January 6th Select Committee is less about retribution than removing constitutional limits on his power. Trump has also pledged to consider pardons for people who took part in the insurrection. Nearly 1,000 rioters have been convicted, with roughly two-thirds getting prison time. Republican Representative Mark Alford of Missouri says Trump government efficiency efforts looking to cut $2 trillion from the budget must include Medicare and Social Security. Alford told Fox Business, given the national debt, Congress has to consider trimming or reforming the health care for seniors program and raising the retirement age.
When people are living longer, they're retiring later, that on the front end, we can move that retirement age back a little bit.
The two programs have long been considered politically sacred, but along with defense spending and interest on the debt, they're the biggest parts of the budget. Democrats want outgoing President Joe Biden to commute the sentences of the 40 federal prisoners on death row to life without parole. Massachusetts Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley says state-sanctioned murder is not justice.
The death penalty is a cruel, racist, and fundamentally flawed punishment that has no place in our society.
Pressley says in his campaign, Biden promised to address the federal death penalty. Project 2025, the blueprint for a second Trump term, calls for an increase in federal executions. Another progressive, outgoing Missouri Representative Cori Bush wants Biden to certify the Equal Rights Amendment before his term ends. Bush says enough states approve the ERA to add it to the Constitution, and she says it's needed given limits to abortion access and gender-affirming medical care.
The ERA is one sentence that has the power to protect our future. Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. That's it.
Ohio lawmakers are fast-tracking a state Senate bill to force the closure of schools with low standardized test scores, but Melissa Cropper with the Ohio Federation of Teachers argues test scores are often tied to poverty and other systemic issues, not school quality.
Those students who are actually having trouble learning now get hidden because they're in a school where the rest of the school is doing better. We need to figure out what are causing barriers to learning and how we address those barriers to learning.
Postmaster General Louis DeJoy clashed with Georgia Republican Rich McCormick in a House Oversight Committee hearing Tuesday. DeJoy gave himself an A grade for efforts to improve the agency's finances while maintaining services, but McCormick said he actually deserved an F.
You can't grade your own paper, sir. I've been to medical school. I got my MBA. You can't. I'm sorry.
DeJoy covered his ears during the criticism. Filling in for Catherine Carley, I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden about the recently released grand jury report on Multnomah County jails. At 6, it's Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 35 degrees. Tomorrow will be rainy with a high of 44. Today in history, in 2008, Bernie Madoff is arrested and charged with securities fraud in a $50 billion Ponzi scheme. The quote of the day is from Nobel Prize winner and Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel, who said, "The opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference. The opposite of art is not ugliness, it's indifference. The opposite of faith is not heresy, it's indifference. And the opposite of life is not death, it's indifference."
The Alaska Native Heritage Center's renovations are complete, and new galleries and exhibits are open in Anchorage. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. As it marked its 25th anniversary, the Alaska Native Heritage Center underwent a major facelift at its Anchorage campus this year, which included new galleries and museum exhibits. One of the latest projects looks at the history of Native boarding schools in Alaska. KNBA's Rhonda McBride reports.
The Native Boarding School exhibit is the first installment in a series that explores the history of Alaska Native education. It is stark and simple, but damning.
There is a power
in naming the evil.
Benjamin Jasek is the Alaska Native Heritage Center's Director of Indigenous Research. And for the past few years, he's been looking at the role of churches in boarding school abuse. The centerpiece of the exhibit is a map of Alaska with tiny red threads hanging from various villages. Each represents a child abused by Catholic clergy. And combined, they make a curtain of red across the state.
There's definitely a difference between just talking about these kinds of things and actually seeing it right there in front of you.
Next to the map is a plaque with the names of more than 100 priests and missionaries, acknowledged by the church as having credible claims of sexual abuse against them. The exhibit is called Education in Alaska, Disruptions in Our Teachings, and will be completed sometime next year. The next installments will look back beyond the boarding school era, before missionaries and Bureau of Indian Affairs teachers took over the education of Native children.
Our relationship with ourselves, each other, and our environment is something that is millennia old.
Jasek says this project will bring the history of Native education in Alaska full circle with exhibits that showcase how Native language and culture are being taught in schools today.
We also have generations of ancestors that still walk with us today.
Jasek says to understand how to heal centuries of historical trauma, you have to understand how boarding schools systematically attempted to destroy the identity of Native children. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
A Native-owned game company is making new resources to help Ojibwe language learners of all ages. Kathleen Shannon has more.
Tony Drews, whose Native name is Chinoden, meaning big wind, was struggling to engage students in learning Ojibwe culture and language until he brought a board game into class. That day led him to launch Naske Native Games in 2023, which sells games that help teach Ojibwe lessons. One is a Native spin on a 1920s-era stock market game. The new version is based on the fur trade, and players deal in important traditional Ojibwe goods such as maple sugar, beads, and wild rice.
The funny thing about the word miigwech is that it means thank you in our language. And the word comes out of the fur trade era. So it was just a natural catalyst to use this game to talk about culture and language, and it was an absolute hit.
Drews says that teaching language through joy, music, crafts, and games increases retention by about 95%. He's currently working with Lakota leaders to create versions of his games with Lakota language and culture. In his own family, Drew's great-grandmother exclusively spoke Ojibwe. His grandmother was sent to boarding school, and his father only knows a couple Ojibwe words. He says Ojibwe culture is baked into the language. The games are designed for Native language learners of any level, Drew says, and for their non-Native neighbors and community members as well.
That was Kathleen Shannon with original reporting by Amy Falegi with Arts Midwest. And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
FBI Director Christopher Wray told the Bureau today that he plans to resign at the end of President Biden's term in January. This announcement came a week and a half after President-elect Donald Trump said he would nominate loyalist Kash Patel for the job. Wray said he would be stepping down, quote, after weeks of careful thought, end quote, roughly 3 years short of the completion of his 10-year term. He added, quote, my goal is to keep the focus on our mission, the indispensable work you're doing on behalf of the American people every day. In my view, this is the best way to avoid dragging the Bureau deeper into the fray while reinforcing the values and principles that are so important to how we do our work, end quote. Wray received a standing ovation following his remarks before a standing room only crowd at FBI headquarters. Some in the audience cried. The intended resignation is not unexpected, considering that Trump had settled on Patel to be director and has repeatedly voiced disparaging remarks at Wray, whom he himself appointed during his first term. But moving to replace an FBI director well before his term is up clearly flies in the face of established tradition. Trump applauded the news on social media, calling it, quote, a great day for America, as it will end the weaponization of what has become known as the United States Department of Injustice, end quote. It's extremely rare for FBI directors to be ousted from their jobs before the completion of their 10-year terms, a length meant to protect the agency from the political influence of changing administrations. But Trump has done it twice, placing Ray in the job in 2017 after firing director James Comey amid an investigation into ties between Russia and the Republican president's campaign. Besides inquiries into Trump's affairs, in particular executing a search warrant at his Mar-a-Lago residence, the FBI in recent years also investigated President Biden's handling of classified information, as well as Biden's son Hunter for tax and gun violations.
President-elect Donald Trump and members of his inner circle plan to cut money in the Inflation Reduction Act allocated for climate efforts. Hundreds of millions of dollars under that law have yet to reach environmental justice organizations. Mike Mullen has more from Minnesota.
In Minnesota and elsewhere, community groups have been looking forward to utilizing environmental justice grants from the federal government. But in light of the fall election, the future of these grants is in doubt. Under the Inflation Reduction Act, the EPA has $3 billion to spend on these grants through the fall of 2026. But the Biden administration has only been able to award about half of it so far, and experts say unspent dollars could be clawed back by President-elect Donald Trump. Julian Nirbun with Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light was hoping for projects to transform churches and other sites into emergency shelters fitted with solar power and battery storage.
MNIPL is trying to support community organizations that are creating resilience hubs, creating safe spaces during an emergency, places where people can refrigerate their medication or have a cooling place in the midst of an unreasonably hot day.
Advocates view such work as a way to help areas long overburdened by pollution and underinvestment be better positioned to withstand the climate crisis. However, congressional Republicans have been vocal about their intention to cut or limit this type of funding, with some likening it to giving, quote, taxpayer dollars to special interest groups committed to a radical energy agenda, unquote. The EPA just opened up the first round of applications for the grant program, groups such as what Nirbun's organization had been eyeing, giving them a short window to navigate the requirements before Trump is sworn in. Some regions have yet to even start the process. Nirbun describes the unfolding scenario as a missed opportunity.
Congregations aren't really talking about politics. They're ready to get to work serving their communities. They want this to be an opportunity to bring safety and resilience to their communities.
It's unclear if Republicans in Washington will be able to work around congressional rules to rescind unspent funds. There's also the question of whether these funds meet the legal term of obligated, meaning they're protected. Some law experts say that status does apply in this situation, but wonder if Trump and his officials will respect that federal law and refrain from trying to seize or rescind obligated funds. This is Mike Mullen for Minnesota News Connection. This story was produced with original reporting from the staff at Inside Climate News.
Extreme weather has disrupted education worldwide. Between January 2022 and June 2024, over 400 million students were affected. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In 2022, extreme rain caused massive floods across Pakistan, killing more than 1,700 people and displacing millions more. Many school buildings were damaged or destroyed, keeping children out of class for months. As the climate warms, extreme weather is becoming more common, and experts worry that these disasters could have a big impact on education.
Globally, we estimated that between January 2022 and June 2024, so 2.5 years, extreme weather events disrupted the education of over 400 million students.
Sergio Venegas Marin of the World Bank studies climate and education. He says even when schools stay open, the shock of a disaster can upend students' lives.
Something very traumatic has impacted them.
So some students may remain out of school while their families rebuild. Others may struggle to learn while still reeling from the trauma. Marin says these harms fall disproportionately on people in low-income countries, where schools may be less able to recover quickly.
These impacts will be felt across generations, as lower education attainment often limits social mobility. So this presents a real threat to the progress we have made in recent decades on poverty reduction.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wants to be one of Gaia's lobbyists.
While we're recovering from the elections and fretting our democracy's future, there's chaos all over the world. The nasty president of Syria fled the country, but no one's sure what comes next. Much street violence in the other Georgia. Canada's investing in more military in the Arctic, and the people of Gaza continue to die. Donnie wants the Ukraine to let Russia keep the territory it's taken or we'll stop selling them weapons. Israel's okay because Trump can't trump the Biden administration's subservient support of Netanyahu. Donnie throws his first threats at Mexico and Canada, who we have long unenforceable borders with. And yes, he's still for prosecuting those American officials who didn't kiss the ring. But Musk has much business with China. Big ag, food service, construction, and others depend upon undocumented workers. Gaia has no lobbyists, no PACs, just all of us depending on her. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael. While we're recovering from the elections and fretting our democracy,
you're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael and David Rosenberg. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Edwin J. Vieira, Mike Moen, Shantaya Hudson, Eric Galatis, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. Our evening news director is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available at our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.